One of the things we adore about RuPaul's Drag Race is how the show turns a group of drag queens fighting for the crown into an epic battle royale. And like all legendary shows, we're left wondering what's really happening behind all that glitter.
Today, Ginger Minj, our favorite Broadway baby turned pageant queen and cross-dresser for Christ, joins us to give us a sneak peek at her new album, Sweet Tea, which features a collaboration with Carney Wilson and music icon Nile Rodgers.
Listen as the Minj serves up a big, cool glass of sweet tea as she weighs in on RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars 2. Adore and Fifi's emotional moments, and the larger-than-life personalities she wanted to portray on Snatch Game.
Plus, all your questions from our Facebook page. You don't want to miss this one.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Hey, girl.
Hey, dude.
You know, Feast of Fun, you're watching this on YouTube, you're listening to this on your podcast, is made possible because of the financial support of fabulous people like you.
Tip us a dollar to hear us holla at feastoffun.com/donate.
Did you know we have some fierce t-shirts at our store? We have t-shirts for all kinds of drag queens. Go to feastoffun.com/store and get yourself a Hunty University t-shirt or I'm not an evil queen, I just got a bad edit. On today's show, we got a lot of hot tea, iced tea, and sweet tea.
Oh, hello.
Hope you're thirsty. Joining us is All-Stars 2 Glamour Toad Ginger Minj. Welcome back to Feast of Fun, girl.
Thanks. Contrary to popular belief, I was on All-Stars 2. I just ended up on the editing room floor for most of it.
You know, even though you're gone, you're still like there in a lot of ways.
My
like
spirit.
All your friends, your sensibilities, your drag pageant. Larger than life southern style.
I've tainted the room.
With what?
My taint.
You got a new album on presale?
I do. And if you buy it on presale on iTunes, you get 4 tracks instantly.
Hold on a sec. I got to give you the bell. Sweet Tea available on iTunes. Billboard magazine that doesn't like anything rated your new album 5 out of 5 stars.
They sure did. I don't know who we had to pay off for that, but it was worth every penny.
You worked with Wendy Wilson?
Wendy Williams. No, I worked with Carney Wilson.
The talented sister.
Oh, they're all great. No.
They all got talented.
I love them. They're great. But Carney and I, like, we really hit it off. Like, we've become good friends.
Now, Carney Wilson is one of the sisters of the group, was it Wilson Phillips?
Hold on for one more day.
They're the ones who sang the, Chick-fil-A song.
Yes, exactly.
And so you also work with Nile Rodgers, who is responsible to most of Madonna's hits, Duran Duran's hits, Donna Summer's hits, and
he
now
did.
You.
Well, he did Chaka Khan
Chaka
stuff.
Khan. He did that song, right?
Yeah, Chaka Khan.
Help me, Chaka Khan.
Chaka Khan. Yeah, that thing. And he did Happy for Pharrell Williams.
Shit.
Yeah, and he did Daft Punk's latest album.
And what did he do for you?
What have you done for me lately? He actually, supposedly, I don't know because I've never actually asked him this story in the brief time that we spent together. He found a clip of me singing from a show on YouTube. Somehow it got passed to him, and he thought that he, like, aside from the drag, he really liked my voice. So we had a 3-hour Skype meeting with his people and my people. I have people now. That's so weird.
You and Nile Rodgers were chatting with each other on Skype.
No, we were chatting with each other through about 15 other people.
Because you have peoples, you have children's,
exactly. Menses and menses. I mean, it's all mixed together in one giant bowl. And after we had this conversation, he decided to assign me to his songwriting team, which was Gene Morrison and Diego Sanchez. And we actually had like one-on-one Skype sessions with that Gene, Diego, and myself. And it just everything kind of came from there. And Jean in particular, I feel like just knows me. Like she looks into my eyes and she sees to the bottom of my soul things that I've never even realized about myself. And I think that's what makes the album so special.
What kind of things are at the bottom of your soul?
Mostly a black pit. Couple of used rubbers. I never use those. And a lot of cake.
So right now, if you go pre-buy the album, you get 4 tracks.
You do. You get them instantaneously.
And why not just sell the album right away? What's the waiting?
I don't know. The album was supposed to be out on the 22nd of September. But originally we were going to name it Pink Lemonade, as a play on Beyonce's Lemonade, sure. As a play on No Tea, No Shade, No Pink Lemonade. And if you put that title with the cover art, it really makes sense. So we submitted
Well, what's the cover art?
It's beautiful. That's what it is. No, it's
Who's
me.
Who's on it?
It's me.
With that. It's Jasmine Masters on
yes,
there.
Yes, exactly. But it's me with that big white hair with the pink roots. Like, everything is just super, super pink and yellow. And it was, that was the intention, was to go in that direction. So we submitted it, and then iTunes got back to us kind of at the last minute and were like, no, there's like some Ethiopian jug band from 1987 that has an album called Pink Lemonade, so you need to think of something else. So then I said, well, let's do like Strawberry Lemonade. It's the same idea, but it's different enough. And they came back and said, no, that's already taken too. And I was at the Producer Entertainment Group offices in L.A. with my manager, David. We were just sitting there. We had been drinking wine. And I looked at him and he said, you want some more wine? I was like, no. I'm thirsty. You got any like sweet tea or something? And he goes, sweet tea?
That'll work.
And I was like, yes, David, it's tea, but it's
air
sweet.
Rights.
And no, he's like, no, that's it. That's it. Sweet tea, because you're Southern, and we could name it like the letter T for like drag queen. No tea, mama, the letter T means truth. And the album was all about like owning up to my truth, all the things that had kind of made me who I am. So it clicked. It was perfect. It made sense. And by the time we submitted it, iTunes was like, okay, well, we can rush it out at this point, but I feel like if we wait and we really kind of promote it, it'll be better in the long run if you just hold off till like the beginning of the next cycle, which would be the end of October.
Because the way I understand it is they rank it on the charts based on the sales on the day it's released. And if you do a pre-release, they count those sales onto the day it's released.
Sure.
That's how I understand it.
I pre-release all the time early.
I do, can we actually tasty. Listen to one of the tracks?
Yeah, absolutely.
What track would you like to show us?
Well, girl.
Girl.
Well, there's 2 tracks that I sent to you. One is an original song that I wrote about my fiance Chris called Bad Bad Boy. And another one is a cover of Here Comes the Rain Again by the Eurythmics. And I got a story actually to tell you about that one and Carney Wilson.
I want to hear the well, which one do we want to hear?
Chris is over here on the couch. Say hi, Chris. Wave. Come behind the... Is he on the camera?
Yeah,
there?
I saw it a little bit. Okay. We're simulcasting this on YouTube, so if you want to listen to our YouTube podcast with Ginger Minj, you can do so. It won't have the songs, but it'll have everything else.
Yeah.
Let's see your... The rain again. Here comes the rain again.
Yeah, let's do it.
like a new emotion.
That's a beautiful song.
Isn't it? It's so good, right? They're editing that in post, P.S. They didn't even listen.
We didn't get to hear it before we tape it.
I'll make sure you listen to it before I go home today. I was Carney and I just got together a couple of weeks ago in L.A. and we recorded a Christmas song.
Yeah.
And on our way from the recording studio to the photo shoot studio, I played her like the entire album because, of course, we're stuck in LA traffic. What else is there to do?
You were listening to Wilson Phillips?
No,
the new album you're working on together.
My album.
Okay.
My Sweet Tea album. I played all of it for her and it got to Here Comes the Rain Again. And she literally almost drove right off the freeway. She's like, hold on. Give me my phone. Girl, give me my phone. I was like, okay. So I handed her phone and she like plugs it into her speaker and she hits a button and then it rings and this voice picks up. She goes, "Hello, Carney." And Carney goes, Annie, you have to hear this cover of your song. She's like, "This is the best version of your song since your version of the song. Like, I can't wait for you to hear that." She's like, "What are you talking about?
Who gave you this number?" Exactly.
So she was like, "I'm going to make sure I get it to you as soon as I can," which is why it's one of like the pre-release mm-hmm. ones that kind of made our decision for that. But she hangs up and I'm just looking at her. I was like, "Girl, what was that about?" She goes, "Oh, it was Annie Lennox. I just wanted to make sure that she knew that this was coming out because she's going to love this. She's going to flip her shit over it."
She's like, "Where's my lawyer?"
What?
Did she flip her shit?
Well, I don't know. I haven't talked to her. I don't have her number.
She said, "Here comes the rain again."
again.
That's a beautiful story. So Carney Wilson's really like an advocate of yours.
Yeah.
Not just a friend.
It's weird how we met too, because I mean, I was a huge fan of Wilson Phillips. That's my era. That's my time frame when I was growing up.
When she said, "Hold on for one more day," you did.
I did.
It was your Gaga Born This Way song of your generation.
Well, and the thing is, you know, being my little Southern family in Leesburg, Florida, like we used to get together every single Sunday, no matter what. And they'd have a fish fry. Well, of course, I'm allergic to fish. I would have chicken tenders and cheese grits and it was delicious, but we'd all get together and my cousins, Amanda and Jennifer, always used to make me like dress up with them and we'd put on a performance. And for a very long time, it would always be Hold On. And of course I looked the most like Carney Wilson. So I got to put on my mother's business suit and sit on a chair, which was supposed to be like one of the rocks mm-hmm. amongst the trees. And we would perform Hold On every Sunday for a very long time. So that's how like that song just kind of sticks with me yeah. from my childhood. And when I was in D.C. last year doing Pride, huge turn. It was crazy. It was so like so many people and it was so amazing. And it had started to rain right before my set. So I wasn't going to let them leave. I went out there in the rain and did like a 45 minute set instead of like the 10 I was supposed to do. And I opened for Wilson Phillips. So I finished the set. The crowd's going crazy. Thank goodness. And then I walk backstage and Carney Wilson's there with her camera. She goes, "Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. I love you." And I said, "Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. I am tired of being mistaken for you." And she laughed and we took a picture and then she tweeted it to me later. And we ended up having a couple of mutual fans, which is so, I mean, like, to me, that was odd. It was a little mind blowing because like, I was like, my career is on this spectrum and hers is over here. Like it's two yeah, opposite.
I mean, it's so
ends.
Weird. A fan of a drag queen would be a fan of a diva. How is that even possible?
But there was one in particular. Her name is Emma. And we both still talk to her. She's a very sweet girl from Minnesota. And she put us into contact with each other and we started talking. And I said, "Well, I would love to sing with you sometime." So we set up this meeting. I flew to LA just to have lunch with her. We went to Lala's or something like that. And we hit it off so much. The lunch turned into like a 3-hour affair. And then she was like, "Hey, get in my car. We're going to go pick up my kids and go for Froyo." So I get in Carney Wilson's car. P.S. She's not a very good driver. And we go get her kids and we go for Froyo. And then we're sitting there and we continue to talk. And like, I'm getting along with her two little girls so well. Lucy and Lola, they're the sweetest, most beautiful things you've ever seen. And then she's like, "Well, hang out here. My husband's going to come and meet us." So then her husband comes on in and we start talking.
Eventually, I'm Googling what her husband looks like.
He's beautiful.
I'm sure he's super hot.
He is so hot. No offense, baby, but he's hot. And, So we went back to her
Rob
house.
Rob Bonfiglio.
Yeah. he plays in the band.
Oh, wow.
With her, yeah.
He plays a tambourine?
That's my job now.
He's pretty cute. He looks like a one of those actors that would have been cast as one of the Brady Bunch boys when the Brady Bunch boys didn't
weren't
look,
available
or didn't look good anymore. You know, like aged out of the part.
And he does. I can attest to the fact he has a beautiful butt because she makes all of her gay friends go, no, you got to feel this butt. You've got to feel it.
What's and it I felt feel it, like?
It was rock hard. It was
she
solid.
She makes you feel her husband's ass.
Yeah. Well, she's proud of it. Yeah. You know?
Oh my God.
So we ended up like spending the entire evening together. We went back to their house. And apparently Lucy and Lola, the daughters, their favorite show is Dance Moms. My favorite show in the world is Dance Moms.
Yeah. Abby.
Yeah. So we sat and we bonded over that. We were watching it and they had gotten to go to the LA opening of the Abby Lee Dance Company there. And they were telling me all the stories and showing me the pictures and we had a good time. They drove me back to the hotel that night and the girls had become so attached. They started calling me Uncle Ginger. And it felt like I had known all of them my entire life. So we started talking almost every single day and excuse me, I need a sip of coffee. I'm getting choked up. No, I felt like I had known them my entire life. And it's always like that with her. Every time I see her, even if it's been a couple months, it's like there's no time lost in between. And we just pick up and we talk. And she's so supportive of everything that I do.
Well, that's how I feel like whenever I see you. It's like we're old friends getting together and shooting the breeze. You have that personality. That's inherent to your personality.
Thank you.
I think so. And, you know,
you have terrible taste in friends, and that's why I appreciate you.
I have some really interesting friends.
That's for sure.
True. I've seen your Facebook list.
You travel with some of my friends.
That's true.
And you have to share a tour bus with them, and you can't even masturbate in there.
You can't.
The Battle of the Seasons bus.
Yeah, yeah. It's like your own little private coffin that you get to stay in, and the air is circulated through each one. So if one person farts, it just carries to the next cabin and then to the next cabin. And it's always Courtney act. It's always.
Can't you put like a diapers on her that absorb carbon diapers that absorb the farts?
Why is she so gassy?
I don't know. Because she's a real woman. I don't know. Like,
so
different makeup than the rest of the rest
she's
of us.
A vegetarian, so it's probably all that Vegemite.
In talking to a lot of the girls before All Stars 2 was being taped and during and afterwards, everybody was very apprehensive about the experience. You guys have well-established careers. You have your fan base. You're working with, you know, the top names in the music industry. And here you are sort of like going back to high school and being put through the same rigmarole that made you guys.
Can you say that again, Rue?
Rigmarole. RuPaul does not know how to say the word dollar. I heard this.
Well, she knows how to say it, but her mouth doesn't like move in that fashion. She can't say decision and she can't say dollar.
Well, how does she say decision?
Decision. She says decision. Defibrillator. Like, you can't tell what the hell she's saying. And for dollar, she always goes to doulas because there's something about dollars that just does not come tripping off of her tongue. So
maybe it's traumatic for a drag queen who sort of came of age in a time period where the world wasn't as embracing of drag as it is today. And, you know, trying to get a dollar from an audience.
May
is
I have
like,
a doula?
Doula.
Give me a doula.
And yeah. So you were really apprehensive about getting, you said, and some of the queen says is like the competition brings out the best or the worst in people.
Yeah. Well, the thing that really kind of pushed me into doing All Stars was
a gun.
That too. A certified letter saying, get your ass to the studio. You're still under contract. No, it was what really made my decision was the album because
the new album you're working on, Sweet Tea.
Yeah.
That's finished.
Sweet Tea, because we originally, like the original plan was to rush it out at the end of season 7 so we could just kind of ride that wave. We had taken so long to get started on the project because there were so many meetings that Ooh La La, the first single that we did release at the end of season 7, was written, recorded, edited, mastered in a video shot within 2 weeks to get it out. And they had churned out a whole bunch of songs that I really didn't have any say in, just trying to get everything finished. And I told them as soon as I got the call for All Stars, which was not very long after the season 7 finale. I mean, it was a couple, maybe a week, maybe 2 weeks until I got the phone call. And I called them. I said, I've got a great idea. I'll do this so I can be on TV again, so we can have that kind of behind it. And then we'll throw all those songs out and start fresh. I want an album that means something. I want an album that isn't just ooch, 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 sweat, ooch, 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 glitter, ooch, 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 drag. I didn't want that.
I like that song. Is it available for sale? No. That's fantastic.
It's available on YouTunes. Yeah. And I'll probably end up doing stuff like that in the future, but I knew that I wanted, because there was such a maybe a misconception of me from season seven, like a lot of people didn't know how to feel about me. Some thought I was the sweetest thing that ever walked the face of the planet, and some thought I was the Antichrist in person. And I
didn't care either way. Why do people feel that way about you? It's like, we know, we've worked with you, we've interacted with you, and believe me, some of the queens behind the scenes kids.
Yeah.
There are a handful. Ginger's not one of them.
Well, and I appreciate that. And I'm not going to blame anything on editing. It's just the simple fact that you only get to see certain parts. So if you're seeing one thing that makes you feel a certain way and then another thing that makes you feel completely opposite, you don't really have the pieces to put together in the middle to kind of get an overall view of who any of us are.
I have a t-shirt for you.
Yeah, let me grab that for you.
Oh, please do.
It's called I'm Not an Evil Queen. I just got a bad edit. Available at feastoffun.com/store.
Ding.
Remember, kids, that this podcast and these videos is made possible because of your financial support. If it wasn't for you guys tipping us a dollar at feastoffun.com/donate.
Adula
Oblongata. If you don't go to get yourself a t-shirt, how the hell, if you can't shop for yourself, how are you going to shop for somebody else?
Yeah, exactly. And 'tis the season almost.
Halloween's coming. Thanksgiving is coming. Christmas is coming.
I'm coming right now.
Look at it. So this is on YouTube. People can see the video.
Oh, yeah.
Hold it up.
This is for you, girl.
This is good.
It's glitter, too.
If you drop glitter in your vagina, does it become glitter?
It should.
These are the questions I stay awake and ask myself at night.
Did you see this? There's this artist and she's selling, and she's Melissa Coulter. She lives in San Diego, and on Etsy, she's selling vagina masks for $450.
You sent me that.
Did it get you horny?
That'd be a good look for you, because then you don't have to paint your face. You can just come out wearing that.
It brings like a whole new meaning to the term cunt face. New cunt face tour. I need to get one for Katya for Christmas. Like, you should. Is totally on her alley.
$450.
Yes. That's
doulas.
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 It's a perfect. And you and Katya are like thick as thieves.
Yeah. Well, I'm the thick one, right?
And she's the thief.
Exactly. Completely.
What's your relationship now like with Katya? Because she's sort of evolved into this performance artist, even though she has a background in performance art. But now her performances are really nonsensical and very creative. And she like brings out a guitar but doesn't play it. And
I will say I'm not really friends with Katya, because Katya is her own
friendship
entity. And she's kind of untouchable at this point. But Brian and Joshua are very good friends. And we have been from the day that we met, because when she walked into that workroom the first day of season seven, nobody else would talk to her.
Why?
Nobody even
knew. She was the unpopular kid in high school.
She was just different, and she was scary because she came in speaking Russian and nobody knew if she even spoke English at that point.
Oh, so she was pulling a fast one on everybody. She wouldn't talk English and totally fucked with her head.
Well, and there's me, like the little awkward theater kid that's like, I like you. You're cool. So
did you know any Russian? Did you try to like translate for her?
I love Russian dressing is delicious. That's about the extent of it for me. But we just started talking, and she had quit smoking like the week before she got there. I was the only smoker the very first day. And when I went out, I didn't want to go by myself. So I said, well, can somebody come with me? And she said, well, I'll go. I just want like one cigarette. So she came with me, and we sat there and like smoked a pack between us for a couple hours and just talked about life in general and really bonded in that moment. And then eventually, like a couple days later, Pearl decided she was going to start smoking in too. So she kind of came into our circle. And by the end of the season, even like Trixie and Miss Fame, who never smoked a cigarette in their life, would just hold an unlit cigarette in their hand so they could come out, join the circle, and kind of be away from the walls of the studio.
Oh, yeah.
You were saying in other interviews that you and Katya are very goofballs, but a certain drag queen that we know and love very well, she was all business on All Stars. Alaska.
Yeah. Well, and I think that you have a choice when you get onto a show like RuPaul's Drag Race. When you enter any kind of competitive situation, you can either go in to make friends or you can go in to win. And you cannot do both. I went into season 7 with the mindset of I'm here to win. I just, whatever it takes, I'm going to push my way through, make it to the top and win. It didn't eventually happen, but that was how I felt going into it. And when I sat back and watched it, I was like, you really kind of squandered some other opportunities that would have been good for you. Like, yes, you have a great friendship with Katya. Yeah, you have a good friendship with Kennedy and Trixie and some of these girls, but you could have had so much more from this moment in your life, from this experience. It could have been so much more magical if you would just let yourself open up to it. So that's how I approached All Stars. I didn't go in going, I'm going to win. I went in going, this time I'm going to enjoy it because I want to remember it when I'm 70 years old as a good experience.
Well, did you enjoy it? Did you?
I did. I loved it.
The first time you go to Disneyland or Disney World, it's a very different experience than when you've gone the fifth or sixth time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I would imagine the experience of being in that workroom on RuPaul's Drag Race.
Well, and I think Alaska was the complete opposite of that. I think she went into season 5 going, well, this is cool. It's my favorite show. I want to meet all these girls. I want to have a sisterhood. I want to forge these bonds. And she did. And it was kind of to her detriment as far as Alaska Talks goes, you know. And when she came into All Stars, she was laser focused. And she was like, I don't care what it takes. I'm not here to, I know these girls, we are friends and we'll be friends again when it's over. But for right now, this is all about me and my journey and what I have to do to win.
So what would you describe Alaska's behavior as being businesslike?
It was very cold.
She was very like not chatty, or people would try to distract her and she'd tell them to shut up. I'm putting on makeup.
From the time that I was there, she wasn't mean and she wasn't a bitch. She was just very cold. She was cut off, closed off, and did not really want to engage in whatever shenanigans the rest of us were getting into. And I couldn't fault her for it because it obviously was working for her. She was in the top. You know, she was succeeding at everything she was doing.
How many lip syncs has Alaska won so
far?
Three. Alaska has made $30,000 and still, as of yet of this taping, not won All Stars. So she's made more money from winning those lip syncing competitions than the first two season winners made collectively.
Completely. And I don't fault her for it. And she and I went on, we all went on Battle of the Seasons and we went on the Christmas Queens tour and we worked together all the time. And she's one of the most lovely people. She's wonderful and she's warm and she's caring and she's fun to be around. And it's like a complete 180 from how she was during the filming of All Stars.
Now, Katya pointed this out in your live podcast at Roscoe's, that although they've set up the drama to have you guys eliminating each other, technically they're still choosing who goes home because they get to see what lipstick you pull out.
Yeah.
And so they know who picked the lipstick. So whoever is chosen to win the lip sync goes home. And so I've been reading on the internet forums and the comments that the kids are not supposed to read. And everybody's like, Alaska did not win that lip sync, but they made her win that lip sync because they wanted to send Roxy Andrews home.
No, it's Tatiana.
I'm sorry, Tatiana home and keep Roxy Andrews.
I don't know what my opinion on it is because I was never in the top. I didn't have to make that decision. I didn't see who was in the room. I didn't see how many cameras were there, if it was the same camera. Because you have to understand, we've got several camera crew members in two studios. It's not the same cameras in each studio.
You mean there's two workrooms?
There's a workroom, and then the main stage is on a complete separate studio.
Oh, yeah, we know that.
So you have to leave a building to go to another
You leave a building to go into the building next to it.
Okay.
And it's not the same camera crew for both most of the time. So I don't know if the producers are there watching. I don't know who knows or any of that. Just watching the lip sync on TV like everybody else, because I wasn't there for that one. I felt like Katya fairly won that lip sync.
It was fun.
She was so into.
She was so good. I thought Adore was doing the performance.
Exactly. Or the girl from The Ring. I couldn't tell. But not just because she's my friend, but I felt like she just gave it her all. She was so into it, and she was so good. Like, she was so emotive and expressive and wonderful with that particular performance. I thought that she should have won.
Well, and Katya's like this gymnast, and so she's slamming her pussy on that stage, her tucked wiener onto that stage. And so it's really hard to sort of, like, outshine that.
Yeah, and I don't think that Alaska did poorly. I mean, Alaska's a smart girl. She's always got a trick up her sleeve. And in the bedroom at home. Like, I mean,
Well, there's been a lot of controversy over first of all, Adore saying this is not the right fit for me. And she's walked away from the competition,
which I completely agreed with. Like, Adore had no business being there. She was so far and above all the rest of us career wise. She sold more copies of her first album than any other drag queen, including RuPaul, had ever sold at that point. You know, like, she was in a league of her own. And I felt like, as her friend, it was a step back for her to go into the competition. She's not a competitive person. It doesn't sit well with her mentally. So,
well, he had
a huge
loss in his family. I think his father died.
Yeah.
That he wasn't very close with. And it's like, I always tell people, it's like, you mourn more the parent that you're not close to than the one that you were to, because you never had that intimacy.
You regret the things that might have been instead of the things that were.
And it messes with you a lot when they pass away. It's like you think, you're like, I never loved my father. Or, we never were close. I won't be sad when they're gone. And then they die and you're just like, oh my God.
Just devastated.
What could have been?
Yeah, absolutely. And I didn't think that it was healthy for her to be there from the get-go. And then when she started to kind of sink into that dark place, all the other girls were like, girl, stay, just stay, just stay. And I was like, don't do it. Don't do it, Missy Lee. Like, literally just... pull your shit and go home and get yourself right, because you're going to be brilliant and amazing and loved the world over no matter what happens. So don't continue to put yourself through something you're not comfortable doing.
What about Fifi? I just feel like she's doing herself a huge disservice. One, by when she was offered to deliberate in front of the camera, she declined that because she felt it was not sincere. But she could have still said, yes, I will talk. I'll just talk about something else, you know? Or.
Yeah. I don't know. Honestly, she is a great person. She really is. The very first time I ever worked with Fifi, I had never met her before. And we were co-hosting a college gig in Gainesville, Florida during season 7. And it was me and her, and then Violent Pearl were performing as well. Because she and I were literally hosting between every segment, there was a lot of running back and forth, pinning in wigs, ripping things off, doing this, that, and the other. And I had pinned a wig in with a pin I didn't realize, like, the rubber tip had come off of. And it was just, I was like, ooh, that's in there. That's good. So I go out and I do my number. I come back. I pull the pin out. It had been embedded in my scalp, and just this single string of blood just goes spurting from my head. I'm wearing an all white costume. Because the very next day was the white party at Parliament House in Orlando. Fifi, without knowing me, without thinking twice, runs up and starts catching the blood in her hand.
She's a vampire.
And dumping it into a Wendy's bag. And that would have been, if she was truly a villain and a bitch and out for herself, like, you know, she is on television, then she would have said, oh, get it all over your costume. I'm going to take that microphone and the rest of the show is mine, 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 mine. But instead, she just kicked into that sisterhood. She just said, all right, Violet, you're on next. I was like, I can't go on next. I still have to put my corset on. She's like, okay, fine. Pearl, you're on next. Pearl's like, I don't even know where we are. So she handled that. She got them all together and got me all patched up and ready to go. And in time for me to go back out there and do what I needed to do.
Well, you were in that situation with her. Did you feel that she was, like, doing herself any disservice? Was she acting differently or... I mean, did you notice anything before the series started airing that you were like, oh, it's not going to work out well for Fifi?
While we were filming, she was acting strange, and I think it was because she was scared. I think she had been so hurt by being pretty much the original RuPaul's Drag Race villain. She was the prototype for all villains that came after her. And she got, you know, people were threatening to throw acid in her face and blow up her car and come and stab her family and, like, all of these terrible things. And she was afraid that was all going to happen again, which it eventually did. So I think she was just too guarded. I think. I mean, she was like.
And then what? She broke because she was.
Well, she was like a crackhead.
She's saying
in a crackhead, like looking through the blinds. Girl, are they here? Are they coming to get me? What's happening?
So you feel
what's
like happening? She's gone a little bit paranoid about the experience.
Yeah, and I think maybe not even paranoid, just hypersensitive over it. To the point
she gave up drag. She's saying she's not going to do the reunion. She's not going to do anything.
Girl, she ain't giving up shit.
Because
she's 115 days left, or 365 days of drag. Like, she ain't giving it up. I think it would be healthy if she took a break. Mm. I think it's healthy that we all take breaks at some point because we get burned out. There comes a time when you are a public figure where everything is just so much. The love, the hate, the responsibility, the constant trial, everything just kind of pushes you down to your breaking point. And you can either snap or you can just take a step back, take a nap, smoke a cigarette, take a week to yourself, and then step back into it.
Yeah, I mean, we get a lot of love and hate from doing the Cooking with Drag Queens episode with you.
Yeah.
And this is one of the funnier comments. It was like, these two big, hefty, hairy blokes who talk like six-year-old girls, yuck, 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 surely they're both double bottoms.
They were talking about me and you.
I
think they were talking about me, too. But what's a double bottom?
I guess it's two bottoms in a relationship, though, fighting over the dildo.
You just bump pussies all night. You could scissor. It's fine.
And to me, I'm like, at this point in the game, I'm just so amused by the negative comments. It's hard to take him seriously, even if there are 100 of them.
When they don't like prepare you at all. Whenever you sign up for something like RuPaul's Drag Race, they just kind of throw you out to the wolves and say, well, good luck, gal. Let us know how it pans out. And when it first happened, I'm from a small town. And even though I was a big fish in Orlando, it's still a big fish in a very small pond. Mm-hmm. I was never into social media. I never really got into any of that. It was so foreign to me. So when that first week happened after they announced the season 7 cast, I had to have all of these social media platforms, and I was looking at every single comment because I thought that's what we were supposed to do, what we had to do. And so much hate was coming through. I mean, there was a lot of love, believe me, plenty of love, but it only takes one comment out of 3,000 that's negative.
That's the one
and
you'll
focus on it. Yeah. And eventually, like at the end of that first week, I get a phone call from Darian Lake, who I had never met at that point in my life. And she just said, Minj, this is Darian. I said, oh, hi. How'd you get this number?
That's what I was going to ask.
Yeah, from Mrs. Kasha Davis. Yeah. And she said, do yourself a favor. Don't fall down the rabbit hole. And I said, what are you talking about? She said, you're fat, you've got a mouth, and you're on television. You are a target. She said, and I sit there and read every comment about you, and they're the same exact comments that I got last year, just with your name cut and pasted instead of mine.
I do feel like the thick and juicy girls get unfairly criticized or targeted more.
Well, you know, I think if
Pearl had said similar comments like you had, they'd been like, isn't she catty? You know, but if it's coming from you, it's like, oh,
we're
she's
obviously
so mean.
Bitter.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's some fat phobia there for sure.
Well, absolutely. And you know what's like crazy to me is that I would say a good 40 to 50% of the comments come from overweight, larger, plus size beauties themselves. And at first it used to really hurt me, like, girl, we're on the same team. We should have each other's backs. And then it clicked in my head. It was like, no, because I represent that part of these people that they don't like. So they cling to it and they kind of take out their aggression on themselves through
me. Cycle of abuse, really.
Yeah. And I'm guilty of doing that before with certain things, you know, and it just drives back to me that we are all human and that we all make the same fucking mistakes over and over and over again. And if we didn't, we wouldn't be human. You know, we wouldn't learn. We wouldn't grow. But she told me, she was like, do not let this get to you, because I fell down the rabbit hole and it took me months of therapy to get myself out of it. Don't read this. Don't read that. And then whatever you do here, just let it go into your head. Just hear la, 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 la. And I said, ooh, la, la, ooh, ooh, la, 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 la. Oh, and that's how ooh, la, la was actually Like, that's how that came to be.
Oh.
Well, it's so like I shared,
I'm a bitch.
I shared that negative comment that that guy made on social media, and I got so much love and so many likes, and everyone's like, he's a meanie. Don't ignore him. So, but I'm just like, and to me, it's like, you know, it reminds me of my mother telling me about her experience raising us as kids. Mm-hmm. You put so much of your heart and soul into raising these children, and then they grow up and say, I hate you.
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, but I changed your diapers. I fed you. I drove you to school. I, you know, took you to ceramics lessons.
Jazzercise.
And your heart is just crushed because you put so much out there thinking that it's going to be liked by somebody. And literally the one person that would appreciate it the most is the one who's going to try to crush your soul.
Yeah. But you also have to realize that, you know, what I started, an experiment that I started was I just responded to everything with love, everything with positivity. I'm really sorry that you feel that way. Hopefully you can find something in your life that is a positive influence to you. Best of luck. All of a sudden they go, oh my God, I was just kidding. You're my favorite person in the whole wide world. I want to have lunch with you every single day.
Why is that the reaction? That seems to be the reaction with most queens is like when you confront these bullies online that they just instantly fall.
Because the majority of them, as RuPaul points out all the time, they're young kids. Mm-hmm. They're people who really haven't been through the same experiences that we have. And we're in such a technological age, you know, like everything is hidden behind screens and computers and phones and all of that. So it's easy to disassociate that these people you're watching on television are actually real human beings who live a normal mm-hmm. life and go out there and do their, they do their laundry and they take showers and they do this, that, and the other thing. It's easy just to look at it as a television character.
But could you also argue that for the people who are on television, it's easy to dissociate yourself also from the audience as well and not think of them as human beings who may have had a bad day and are lashing out at you because their house burnt down? Because that happens to me sometimes, mm-hmm. and I've noticed this with a lot of performers in the media, is that I remind them, this is a customer service issue. It's like you're a waiter at a restaurant, and you brought out this beautiful hamburger and fries, and that person's just, like, not happy.
Yeah.
And really, it's don't take things personally, because they don't know you.
Yeah.
They're really hard for them to hurt you.
Yeah.
And really, they're, you know, they just need a little bit of more love than they've gotten from someplace else.
Well, and exactly. And that's why I don't really take much of it personally anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are some things where you have to take it personally.
I saw you on television sing I Am What I Am in front of Harvey Fierstein, and he was crying. I didn't think you sounded that bad, but he was crying.
You're an idiot, and I hate you.
Well, tell us about that. That must have been like...
Well, first of all, the only that's criticism so that I've really gotten about the album so far is that that song isn't on it.
Okay.
And I said to myself, I was like, I tell these people, that's a song I've sung for years. I've ended every cabaret I've ever done with that song for years, and nobody paid attention to it. And when we were doing the album, like, there was a certain number of covers we were willing to do, and there were so many versions of that song on iTunes and YouTube and Amazon and everything that it didn't seem like it was a good fit for the album. It didn't seem like it was necessary. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, I'm out on the Battle of the Seasons tour, and I get a phone call from Logo saying, hey, we want you to come and do this tribute performance for Harvey Fierstein at the Trailblazers. Mm-hmm. They didn't say what it was. They said nothing. They just said, bring this red dress and wear a nice wig and, like, just come and meet us here in New York. So we get there and all of us walk in. The five of us walk into the rehearsal hall the next morning and they go, okay, we're doing I Am What I Am. And in our heads, we're like, oh, it's probably like the Gloria Gaynor. And we're just dancing around lip syncing. They said, all right, now you two go over here. You two go over here. Ginger, come stand right down center because you're singing the song.
No warning.
No warning. Which, of course, did not sit well with the other girls.
And what's the time frame here? Are you doing it that night, the next day?
The very next day.
Okay.
And they had hired the choreographer from SNL. P.S. I never even knew there was a choreographer for SNL. But as wonderful as she was like on crack because she was like, then you're going to do, and then you're going to spin and then you're going to kick. I was like, are we in Showgirls? It was like, PK turn, Nomi, PK turn.
Thrust it.
Exactly. She was out of her mind, insanely energetic.
Was the choreography like hard to follow?
Mine was easy. Stand here.
But everybody else was like sort of a backup dancer. Yeah. And they had to do it all in
sync. There was like six of you all together, right?
There were five of us.
Five of you? And
yeah,
so they're
it was
all
me, Alyssa, Alaska, Tatiana, and Fifi. Mm-hmm. And as much as we are all sisters, it did not sit well with them for a brief moment. They were like, well, especially Alyssa's like, oh, now I'm a backup dancer for the old men's change.
Oh, yeah. It's like watching it's like watching Sharon Needles do Battle of the Seasons and she's got to be a backup dancer to somebody. I'm like, I know she can't be liking that.
But we were there for the final dress rehearsal that night. Uh-huh. And they had this was right after the Pulse shootings in Orlando. And we didn't realize, I guess we knew, but it didn't click in our heads that they had decided to dedicate the entire program to the victims and to Orlando. You know, I'm from Orlando. I'm a huge part of that community.
Yeah, let's talk about that in a minute.
Sure, if you want to. But when they were reading the prompter and it said, from All Stars 2, we've got this person, this person, this person, this person, and Orlando's own Ginger Minj, every single one of them went, this is right. This makes sense. This is good. Mm-hmm. And then we did it, and the place erupted, and Harvey Fierstein came running up to us, giving us a, honey, oh, I'm happy, I love it, it was so good. To all of us, it wasn't just me, because if you watch the performance, I might be the focal point, but it's not about me. Mm. It's about something much bigger than any of us, and it was magical, and it was such a beautiful, like, life-changing experience for all of us.
I love your Harvey Fierstein impersonation.
I should have done that on Snatch Game.
Yeah.
Rue, honey.
you were wanting to do, you had a lot of, you wanted to do Mama June. Or Honey Boo Boo.
I wanted to do Honey Boo Boo, and
they said no.
Well, no, they didn't say no to Honey Boo Boo. They said, well, we just don't think she's as relevant as she once was.
You wanted to do one of the judges, Ross Matthews?
I wanted to do Ross Matthews really badly, and they said no because
he's not relevant enough.
Well, no, because he's a man, and they were like, unlike Little Richard Michael Jackson, like, he doesn't wear sequins and rhinestones and makeup. I said, that bitch is painted every week that he comes out here. But they just weren't okay with it. And I probably should have pulled a Katya and said, fuck it, I'm going to do it anyway. But you try to play the game, you know, well, we all play it different ways. And my way was just to kind of listen.
Well, you did the late Tammy Faye Messner, who is an extraordinary legend in terms of drag, but also World of Wonder produced that great documentary, The Eyes of Tammy Faye. So there was a lot of synergy there. And
she's one of Rue's favorite people in the whole wide world. And
I believe Sharon Needles has her tattooed on her body.
She does. Yeah, she does. And during season 7, Rue tried to talk me out of doing Adele because she really wanted me to do Tammy Faye. On my audition video, I had done a character with that thick Minnesota accent. Oh, God, you know, it's just so great. And we're happy to be here. And she just went, like, that's the one thing from my audition video that I think got me cast, because she always went back to that. She's like, please do it, please do it. And I wasn't comfortable enough doing it, so I just stuck with what I was doing. And it worked out.
Can we hear some of your Ross? I'll give you a match game question. You can
I don't know. I'm on the spot now.
I just went, the caveman said, I just went to a very unusual wedding. A dinosaur blanked the bride.
Well, Rue, I'm just excited to be here, really. And you look so beautiful tonight. I just want to say, you remember what dinosaurs are like, right, Rue? Because you're old. what was the question? And that's what, like, people, it gets snipped down. All the, the judge's commentary gets snipped way down. But he'll just ramble on like that for 15 minutes and never get anywhere. And if he'll go, wait, what was the question? What were we talking about? And they'll say, da-da-da-da-da, it was this. And he goes, oh, yeah, your dress was great.
So the judges deliberate for a long time.
Hours.
And you're standing there in heels going, goodness, done.
You're out there for hours. And the most frustrating thing is when you're at the far end of the stage and they start over here and you know that halfway through, you've been standing there for 2.5-3 hours. They're going to go, all right, cut. We're going to take lunch. And you're like, I've been standing here for 3 fucking hours for no reason. My feet are bleeding.
You girls got to be careful, because that's what brought down Prince. Did you know that he loved wearing high heel shoes, high heel boots? And
high lifting, heels were made for men.
Well, and it lifts your ankles up, but it throws your hips out of alignment. And then that starts lower back problems, hip problems. And if you're a Jehovah's Witness, like Prince was, you don't have surgery to fix it. Ooh. And you get addicted to painkillers, and then you wind up dead in an elevator shaft.
Well, there you go.
So, girls, you know, Alaska's kind of smart wearing those boots underneath that dress. You know?
Well, and Katya always wears those little, like, half-inch jellies.
Yeah, all the drag queens are saying that, like, the queens on Drag Race are not wearing high heels this season. Like, what's up?
Have you guys I always do. I always wear high heels.
It's
always
painful, and I totally... I used to be this thinny, skinny little drag queen. I used to wear these hooker pumps, you know, with tiny little heels. I can't do that anymore. I'm a big, heavy guy now.
I always wear at least like a 5.5-6 inch heel because I'm 5'2". And I like to at least give the delusion of being a glamazon. So I'll wear 10 feet of hair and, you know, a half a foot of shoe just to do that. But you're absolutely right. Like, I got out of bed this morning to go, like, brush my teeth or whatever. And I couldn't walk because my ankles just hurt so bad. And my feet are just sitting in a weird position. Because you spend so much time in these heels, your feet don't know where to go or what to do.
I'm going to give you a little secret to rejuvenation. This is a face of an 80-year-old man. Inversion tables. Get yourself an inversion table. Hang upside down. We're going to put you in after the show.
Oh, good
Lord.
They
won't do that on Facebook Live.
You and your, okay? You and your kinky business.
And so the inversion table sends blood and nutrients to your organs and to your brain and to your face. And so it youthfulizes you.
It euthanizes you.
Youthfulizing. And you, it helps. It's helped my back. It's been amazing. I swear to God, it's the best
I'll get right on top of that, Rose.
For performance. Let's talk about Pulse in Orlando. You were touring at the time, and you started getting all these text messages.
I'm going to start by saying, like, I'm not the spokesperson because I wasn't there, and it's not my story to tell. So I really don't, I have opinions certainly, but I'm not the mouthpiece for what happened and how that made people feel. But I know that for me personally, I had a lot of friends who we did lose. I had a lot of friends who were in the building that fortunately made it out, and we were in St. Louis, Missouri, on the Battle of the Seasons tour. Katya, Binda LaCrim, and myself had gone out to eat. After the show, we went back to the hotel. It was about 1:30-ish. Fell asleep because we had to be up in a couple hours. And I woke up to my phone going crazy at about 2:30, 2:45. And it was going so crazy. My ringer is never on when I sleep at all. But it was just, it kept lighting up this dark room. And it was almost like a strobe light. It kept going off so quickly. So I pick it up and I start reading through from the beginning. And it just, it seemed like a practical joke. It seemed like somebody was trying to just get a reaction or a rise or something. Sister, I think I'm going to die. I'm in this club. Da, 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 da. And then I'm like, stop it. You don't be stupid. Then you continue to read more and more and more and more. And it just, it seemed like a movie. It didn't seem real. I thought I was dreaming. And then, of course, I went and I took a shower and never went back to sleep. And I just, like the rest of the world, sat there and watched it unfold. And I felt like the biggest asshole in the world because I wasn't there. Not there in particular, but I was on this tour and I couldn't get back and I couldn't help this community, the community that made me, the community that has always been there and supported me. I couldn't be there to help them.
You had a friend who escaped by crawling through an air duct?
Several of my friends. Actually, Roxy Andrews' drag son, Axel. Him, our friend, we call her Piggy, but her name's Angelica Sanchez, drag legend. And a couple other people were in the dressing room, and they were on the phone with the cops. They didn't know how to get out, how to escape. So they had to wiggle through the air conditioning shaft to get out. And Angelica, she's a big girl.
How big is the vent for that thing? Because I'm like, we have air AC ducts. There's no way.
They took an air conditioning unit out. They pushed the unit out.
They pushed the unit out and then had to crawl through.
Okay.
And then they had to go through, like, so, I don't exactly know because I don't feel comfortable sitting down and saying, please rehash this for me with my friends. But, you know.
So it's not like a scene from The Breakfast Club where
we're not crawling.
Emilio Estevez is crawling through the duct.
But they had to go, like, through where the air conditioning unit was and then crawl through a different space. And it was just all this stuff. And I remember the only thing that Piggy had said to me, she was like, sister, she's like, I'm a big girl. I didn't know if I was going to make it through there. She said, if he didn't kill me, I thought that my waist was going to kill me. Like, they got her through. It took all their manpower, but they pushed her through. And it's crazy.
Miracles do happen, man. It's like surviving something like that. It just it messes with your head, too, because you're like, why didn't it, you know, why not me? And you're just like counting your blessings. And it really makes you sort of like take account of your life.
Absolutely. And it just, I finally had the opportunity to go back to Orlando and go to Pulse and just kind of have that moment. And it's just, it's overwhelming. It's like this place. It's one of the first places in Orlando that ever gave me an opportunity to work when I was starting out, you know, because nobody wants to take chances. There's so many entertainers in Orlando. It's such a huge drag scene that everybody's kind of established. Everybody has their own gig and it's hard to get your foot in the door. But Pulse was very welcoming. It's back when Roxy Andrews was on cast. Detox worked there a lot. And I remember I worked with Blade Matthews, and it just, it was such a good experience. It was such a happy place. I have nothing but good memories from being there. And whenever something comes in to you, like you feel like this is your home and people have come in and violated you in the place that is your safe place, is your house. It's hard to describe and it's so overwhelming. And I don't know that you ever truly recover from something like that.
We have some great questions from the audience, and I want to read this one. Alaska Thunder Truck says, did you think you had season 7 in the bag as others, including Katya and most of the audience age over 13 did?
No, because what pageants have taught me over the years is that no matter what you do, no matter how many times you dot your I's, cross your T's, and think you've got it in the bag, something can always swing away from your favor at the last moment. And I knew that I had done a great job. I knew that I busted my ass, and I would have been a deserving winner had they decided to crown me. But no, I never expected them to crown me. I never said, this is mine, this is nobody else's. Because when you get to that final three, well, we were at the final four. We didn't know the final three until they actually played it on television. But
oh, really? You didn't even know who was in the top three until the
finale? No, because the top four episode, they film all four of us getting eliminated.
Who was the fourth one that got eliminated?
Kennedy.
It was Kennedy. Kennedy. Davenport. Oh, okay.
Now, I thought that was more of a surprise than me not winning, was Kennedy not making it into the top three. A, because she's a great friend of mine, but Rue loved her. Rue loved Kennedy.
She's a magnificent performer.
She's one of the best entertainers you'll ever see in your life. No matter how you feel about her personally, go watch her perform because you'll never see shit like that anywhere else.
Mitchell Smith and a bunch of other people. Is this a common question? Because you're known as a ginger Minch. Does the carpet match the drapes? They want to know what color your pubic hair is.
Well, I had the carpets ripped up. It's all hardwood floors now. It's much easier to Swiffer that way.
Hey, I'm going to end this Facebook Live here, but you can catch out the rest of the podcast.
I didn't know we were Facebook Live.
Oh, yeah, honey. Feastoffun.com. Find us on iTunes. And also, too, this will be up on YouTube.
The entire thing on YouTube. Yeah. Minus the copyrighted music.
Yes, of course.
Jamie May, he's a long-term fan, long-term listener, loves the story that you said the first time you came on the podcast about getting into a phone.
Is it the Ike Turner
the
story?
The Ike Turner incident.
I get that everywhere I go because of talking about that here.
Have you ever gotten into sort of an argument or a fight with another famous person over the phone like that? That was kind of a rare experience for you.
Yeah, I'm not a fighter.
You were mad because Ike Turner had hurt Tina Turner, your idol.
But,
and so you found his phone number and called him, and for some reason he answered it.
And that's why I don't hold things against these younger kids who say terrible things to me. Because I've been there. I've been that person. When I was younger, yes, I watched a movie. I watched What's Love Got to Do with It, and I saw Lawrence Fishburne as Ike Turner beating up Angela Bassett as Tina Turner, and it clicked in me like, I like her, and I hate you, and I've got to let you know that. But it was before Twitter, it was before Facebook, it was before even MySpace or Friendster, it was before all of that. So I spent several weeks on the phone getting connected from information to information until I finally got a phone number to reach him.
It took you that long to find him.
Yeah.
What were you hoping to accomplish by calling Ike Turner and talking to him? What would you have liked for him to say or do?
I don't know. In retrospect, I have no clue. I think that I never thought I would actually be put in contact with him, that I never would have actually reached him and gotten through. But that's the story that I always have to go back to remind myself, like, these kids that scream at me because I said something about Pearl, who I love and adore, like, it's okay because they think it's happening when they see it in that moment. That's their truth and their reality in that exact moment, no matter how long ago it happened, no matter how it happened or any of that. And they're mad and they want to let you know.
Oh, yeah. Because it always seems kind of like the present. It's like when Faust and I, we talk about film or we write things, it's like we have to keep it in the present tense because, like, it's something that's there and it's always going to be there in this present tense.
Well, it's like Mimi, I'm First. She always tells me, I can always tell when either of my two seasons air in a new place for a new time. Because even though it's happened, you know, 4, 5, 6 years ago, they think it's happening in that moment at that time. And she says the whole hate train starts all over again.
Oh, yeah. Congratulations to Mimi. She just won a crown, too.
She's Miss America.
Miss America. Mm-hmm. She didn't win All Stars. She didn't win Drag Race, but she is Miss America.
Oh, she won in the long run because she's one of the most infamous queens.
Mm.
Would you like to see this is a question that someone wanted to know. Who do you feel should have been there in All Stars that it wasn't? That you would have liked to have seen, you know.
Well, I thought that everyone who was there earned their spot for one reason or another, but there's only 10. And there's so many that are worthy of coming back. I would love to see, honestly, like a redemption season where it's a lot of the early outs who didn't get to show what they are capable of. Because I work with these girls and I see how good they are. Mrs. Kasha Davis definitely deserves another chance.
Magnolia Crawford.
Mrs. Kasha Davis.
Well, Venus Delight.
Magnolia.
We have not Venus seen Delight. Enough about Venus Delight.
Magnolia gave up drag. She doesn't do it at all anymore. She's just a hairy daddy now.
Nicole Page Brooks.
I love Nicole Page Brooks. But I would love to see, like, Jiggly come back. I think Jiggly has a lot
Jiggly
more to prove.
I think Jiggly is well on her way back. Kids, she is the one drag queen besides Nicole Page Brooks that's name always comes up.
Yeah.
Everybody loves talking. And, you know, be nice to Jiggly Caliente. Don't make her the butt of everybody's jokes. It's a little lazy.
Well, she and I actually just recorded a rap song for Christmas.
What?
Yeah.
What?
It's so, well, you'll have to wait and listen. It's good. I thought I was Biggie.
All I want for Christmas is all my teeth.
Is new front teeth. Yeah.
She got them, though. Her smile looks great.
It looks like she's smuggling a box of Chiclets through immigration. I mean, they are so new and so good and so big.
We got to wrap this up, but Misk Micker 413 is asking, what's one of the strangest fan encounters you've ever had?
One of the strangest fan encounters I've ever had. Not last time. When we were here for the season 7 finale show last year, like after the season ended and we were all here, someone did not care that I referred to myself as a crossdresser for Christ and decided they wanted to fight me in the parking lot. And I had pneumonia and I was not featuring it. So I fought back.
What?
You threw a punch
he like followed me to the car and the car door was open and I was about to get in. I was ignoring everything going on around me because, you know, a lot of people want to say shit, especially when you're in like drunk and you're in the height of that moment and everything had just come down after the end of the season. But I was so sick. I could not breathe on my way to get in this car, to go to the hospital, to do a breathing treatment before I got on an airplane. And he grabbed my shoulder and said, "You fucking fat bitch. I told you to turn around and talk to me." It looked like he was going to hit me. So I had my shoes in my hand. I just clocked him right in the side of the face with my heel. And he,
that's a fan encounter.
Yeah, and he went to go after me, and security pulled him off, and I got into the car and left. So that was like, this is probably the roughest one, but a nice fan experience that I never expected was when my grandfather passed away. It was the week of the season 7 finale. We're from Leesburg, Florida, teeny tiny little town, and I had to schedule this time to go to his funeral, which was already weird and made me feel like shit. And I show up and there is a line of more people than I've ever seen in the entire town of Leesburg out the door, and flowers everywhere. And I went to my mom and I was like, who are all of these people? And she started crying and she was like, go read the book. So I start flipping through the guest book and it's all people that were like, I've never met your grandfather, Ginger, but aww, if he's responsible for raising you, then he deserves my respect. So people had driven from all over the country to come to his funeral. People that didn't drive down sent flowers and cards and gifts and like all sorts of things. It's this outpouring of love that I never expected on that level. And that's what kind of got me through his passing, got me through the end of the season, got me through not winning. It just let me know that no matter what else happened, there's people out there that have my back and care.
Ginger Minj, it's always a pleasure talking to you. The new album, Sweet Tea, is available on iTunes. We're going to, well, before we leave you, can you hold the t-shirt one more time for the camera? Help us sell one.
I want to remind folks we can't do this podcast without your support. And one of the best ways to support the podcast is to get a t-shirt. Go to our store, feastoffun.com/store. Get your I'm Not an Evil Queen, I Just Got a Bad Edit t-shirt.
You look so cute on the camera, by the way, holding the t-shirt up.
Who, me?
Yeah, it's really adorable, actually.
I'm Vienna Whitebread. That's my new drag name. I'm going to audition for season 10.
As much as we love you in drag, it's also nice seeing you out of drag. And
it's so nice being out of drag, you know, at this point. I feel like there are days, just to be completely honest, where you have that internal identity crisis struggle because you spend so much time as this character. You're working every single day and getting on it. The only time you're out of drag is when you go to sleep, pretty much. And you wake up and do it all again. You're like, oh my God.
Do you ever think about redoing your look to be more like a Dora Delano so you don't have to cinch or be like Lady Bunny and you just wear like a muumuu and...
Or be like Fifi and just quit it all together and she have didn't sex quit. On the bed.
How is she ever going to quit drag?
Exactly. Listen, all you got to do is hire yourself a hot model and then get some tempera paints and have sex on the bed and call it your music video.
Buy her album too. It's good. It's available on iTunes. Ding. But buy mine
ding
first.
For Fifi.
Thank you so much for coming on the
podcast. Oh my God, I love you guys. I love you too.
Oh, well, we're going to listen at the end.
You can listen to Bad Bad Boy.
Ooh. Bad Bad. And that's a song dedicated to your fiance.
Yeah. Well, in the story CJ. Of that song is the fact that, you know, when I met him, not completely recently, but in the recent realm, gotten out of a very long-term relationship that just wasn't healthy. And I was traveling a lot and my grandfather, so many things that happened. The last thing on earth that I wanted was a relationship. Mm-hmm. And then this one comes smiling at me and talking to me. And I just could not help myself. Like I felt
get
like
over here.
I felt
get
like I knew him
here.
My Show, entire life.
Stand up.
I think he fell asleep on the couch.
People want to see what he looks like so they can steal him away.
Look how cute he is.
Like our old, camera guy.
Okay, so yeah, Reddit.
The camera guy, what?
I told Brad, I was like, oh yeah, Ginger wasn't happy because it's like, it seems like you were flirting with her boyfriend. And
well, then he goes on Reddit and says, oh, I don't like Ginger Minj because she tried to get me fired from my job for flirting with her boyfriend. And I responded,
let's be clear, no one gets paid on Cooking with Drag Queens. You know, it's like all that money goes to spending on production costs.
Well,
it's like,
I'd like to be clear that Mary, I don't care if you flirt with him. He's cute. That's why I picked him. He is very cute. He's very flirtable and he's very flirty. The only thing that pissed me off was I had to keep saying shit like 12 times because he would stand here with the camera like this and just look over here and talk to Chris over here. That's it. When you're baking a pie, you got to do it all at once.
Well, we appreciate it. You guys can watch Ginger Minj on Cooking with Drag Queens.
That's a good pie.
It's a very good
Ginger Wilson, because I wore my Carney Wilson wig.
Mm. Oh, that's why you had that wig. Oh, I was like, it was a tribute to Carney Wilson.
Sure. Well, okay, the story about that wig. I went to Beatniks right across from Rocco's. From Roscoe's. Blah, blah, blah. I feel like Rue. I can't talk anymore.
Doulas.
I went to Roscoe's. I went to Beatniks, and they had this wig, and there's this picture that I have of Carney in my phone that's that exact hair, exact color. So I bought the wig just to put it on my head and snap a picture and send it to her side by side. And I was like, well, it's actually kind of cute. I was like, it's cute. I don't have any lace to glue down. I have to spray my forehead black. I don't have to do anything except put that on. And I liked it. Even if most of you in the comments hated it, I felt beautiful.
I thought it was nice. You know, it was also like very domestic.
Mm. Yeah.
It was very, you know,
it's hard to cook with big hair.
June Beaver.
Honey, some of these queens, like, because, you know, there's flames in there and they have these afros, beehives, you know, and the flame comes on because we're like, it's time to set this kitchen on fire. And they're like, God, I don't want to die for a shitty video.
I do have a fire extinguisher right there. Just
well,
in case something happens.
My goal is, you know, Chris is actually, he's an ordained chef. Oh, my God. I really can't talk. No, he's...
Minister.
I'm an ordained minister. He's a certified chef. Like, went through school for all of it, and he's a wonderful, great cook, great baker. I want to go on Cupcake Wars. And I want to be his assistant. And I just want to, you know, the biggest wig, the longest nails, the tackiest clothes. I want to walk around. I want to melt my fingernails, like, accidentally in the oven or catch my hair on fire. And then make it to the final round... And just decorate the shit out of that display. Every rhinestone and feather and bead you can find.
Did I ever tell you that we like did one of those RuPaul Drag Race Skype auditions for a certain food interest network? And they asked us exactly the same questions that the girls on Drag Race get asked.
Yeah.
Instead of drag, it was the word food.
It was Show crazy. Us your best food.
Yeah, it was literally like, do you consider yourself a competitive person? What happens when you get eliminated? You know, stuff like that. And I'm just like, God, this is, you know. But anyways, Ginger, thank you so much
You're
for
welcome.
Coming. We
thank
love you.
You.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye. Bye. Oh, Katya's calling.
You're so bad.
And I hate your smile. The way it grabs me and drives me wild. Should I want you the way I do? In my thoughts, yeah, I'm caught. Oh, damn, I'm drawn to you. Pain and kiss my lips make me feel no shame. Gotta have what I want and you're to blame. Cause you're a bad, bad boy. Making me feel like I'm your toy. And all men should be bad, cause you're a bad, bad boy. Making me feel like I'm your toy. Hitting me up like an all men should be bad. Be bad, bad, bad boy. Bad, bad boy. Walk my way and I hate your stare. The way you look tells me truth or dare. Don't wanna want you the way I do. Yeah, my thoughts, yeah, I'm lost. Oh, damn, I'm drawn to you. Baby, kiss my lips, make me feel no shame. Gotta have what I want and you're